This is Indie Book Publishing. Indie Book Publishing is a show about new books and the authors who wrote them. It's an opportunity for prospective readers to hear directly from the writers, to hear what inspired them to write and publish, and to hear all the inside details about their books. And now, Indie Book Publishing with your host, Steve Jorgensen.
The title of the book, The Merging of Two Worlds, The Convergence of Scientific and Religious Thought. And the author is Roy E. Bork, and Roy joins us now on Indie Book Publishing. This interview brought to everyone by Westbow Press. Hello, Roy.
How do you do, Steve?
Well, great to have you with us. You're really going to have us think deeply and use both sides of our brain, which I know is going to be a challenge for me and maybe for others. As you say, science is a left brain subject and religion is a right-brained subject, and you're going to kind of converge those, as your title says. You also say, I started out with the intent of presenting God in scientific terms, but personal experiences would guide me to see God as creator and to recognize that science and religion are two different expressions of the same thing. The result is that I had to research religion so I could look at both sides of the argument. I don't try to justify religion, I explain it. Well, that's a whole different viewpoint from someone who's been involved in science so much as you've been involved throughout your career. I know you have a background. Tell us about your background, Roy.
Well, I was trained in the nuclear power field, and they trained me in nuclear and conventional physics and chemistry, electromagnetic theory, electrical generation theory and application, and advanced mathematics. So I had a pretty good idea of how cosmos works from a scientific perspective.
But you also had some spiritual experiences along the way.
I had a spiritual experience when I was 9, and what I saw in the mystical experience was, meditating on God, this cosmic singularity, although I couldn't put a name to it. And it wasn't until I studied the unified field theory in physics that I said, that's what I saw. But I saw it from a religious perspective. Now I'm seeing it science. However, everything was going the way science goes, and I could even explain the religious experience in terms of science. And then I met my first wife. One of the things, she used to be able to read cards, and we used to have card games. She would tell me what to play. So one day I went out and bought a brand new deck of cards, and I brought it home, and I shoveled it under the table, and I said, what's this card? And she names it correctly. I went to the second card, what's this card? She names it correctly. And I went through 16 cards, and she missed two, which is a mathematical impossibility. So I set the cards on the table, and I said, do you mind telling me how you're doing this? And she said, they tell me. And I said, who's they? And she says, these people inside. And I says, what people inside? She says, I don't know how to explain it. There's these people inside, and they tell me things, and I just know. Well, that was the beginning of a whole new set of rules that I didn't understand. And when my first wife passed away, I had numerous things that I couldn't explain, which forced me to say, okay, I got to look at the religious side again, because there's something I'm not seeing here. So that's what got that ball rolling. And then psychology is where I learned about split brain theory, and says, now I'm seeing why two ways to see things differently.
So what is the link between religion and science?
Well, science is a left-brain subject. It sees everything in logical expression, so it presents it as mathematical models. But religion sees everything in associations. So it sees the forces of creation as a creator, which is where you get the term supreme being, whereas science sees it entirely differently. So depending on which brain is functioning is depending on what mindset you're going to have. So a religious advocate is working off the right brain hemisphere, sees everything in associations, and understands it from that perspective, whereas scientist sees everything in logical expressions. but they're both looking at the same thing.
How do you define faith?
Faith, well, that's an interesting word because I found an old definition. Well, let me give you the modern definition. 1970, Webster's New World Dictionary says, faith is unquestioning belief that does not require proof or evidence. I had a 1904 Noah Webster's Dictionary, and this is the definition. It says, the assent of the mind or understanding to the truth of what God has revealed. Simple belief of the scriptures, of the being and perfections of God, and of the existence, character, and doctrines of Christ founded on the testimony of the sacred writers is called historical or speculative faith. Now, in less than 50 years, that's what the definition changed to. In the Bible, it says, faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen. And any scientist says he doesn't have faith, well, he wouldn't conduct a single experiment if he didn't. Bible also says, prove all things, hold fast that which is good, and it says faith without works is dead. So the problem there is that if you're believing that faith is unquestioning belief, it doesn't have any biblical support, nor does it have support in what the old definition used to be.
Now, you say one of the most controversial aspects of your book is this message. There's a number of them, but this one message, you say it challenges the evolutionist concept that we are cosmic accident.
Yes. When I studied the Mayan calendar, I realized that the Mayan calendar is playing out in very definite order. There's 9 levels to it. The first level is 16.4 billion years long. It accounts for, from the what we consider the Big Bang, to multicellular organisms. And then we have the second level, which is 820 million years, and that results in the establishment of mammals as dominant. The third level is 41 million years, and we have primates developing family-oriented groups called the familiar conscious level. The next level is 2 million years. This is where we have hominids developing hunter-gatherer groups, and it's called the tribal conscious level. The fifth level is 102,000 years. We have Homo sapiens establishing early civilizations with the widespread development of agriculture. It's called the regional conscious level. The sixth level is called the national conscious level. It's 5,125 years long, and in that level, all the world's nations are established, and all of the world's religions are established. And it ends in the Industrial Revolution and the widespread manufacture of goods. The seventh level is called the planetary conscious level. It's 256 years long. During that time period, we have the global pollution and evolutionary problems starting to rise, and that one ends with the global communications and the Internet. We're now in the galactic conscious level, which is 12.8 years long. Now we're having the International Space Station, and the Hubble telescope is finding other solar systems that may have planets that could support life. And this year, in April, starts the universal conscious level. It goes 260 days, and then all 9 levels total come to an end on December 21st, 2012. If you were to put rate of change over time on a graph using the Mayan calendar, it follows an exponential scale. And when the scale, at the end of the Mayan calendar, the scale goes right off the scale.
Well, there's a lot of fear about this Mayan calendar. How do you see this playing out this year?
Well, the Mayan calendar, there's nothing after, and that's what has people concerned. They see it as the end of time. And it's not the end of time, it's the end of the evolutionary process as we know it, which means that a new world is going to open up to us that we probably can't even conceive what it is yet. But the Mayans never saw the end of the Mayan calendar as the end of the world. They saw it as a transformation of consciousness. If you follow string theory, they said there's up to as much as 11 dimensions. Presently, we're only aware of 4. So what's available in those other dimensions that we don't see yet? I think that's what's going to start to reveal itself at the end of this year. So it's going to open up a new world to us, and we can't yet see. So the scriptures say, look for a new heaven and a new earth, for former things have passed away. And I believe that that's what we need to do, is start looking for a new heaven and a new earth.
Well, let's go back to the Garden of Eden. Let's just talk about this forbidden fruit. What do you say it was?
The forbidden fruit is anything that entices you but leaves you destitute if you partake of it. The tree is metaphorical, and the branches represent all the subdivisions of what that is. In today's world, we have unwanted pregnancies and abortions. We have drug addictions. We have compulsive gambling. These are all parts of what the forbidden fruit is. They're all belonging to the same tree because they all have the same effects. It literally sucks the life right out of you. That tree is as real today as it was then. So the tree never went anywhere. The story is metaphorical. So we've lost touch of what that story is trying to tell us because we take it purely as literal.
And religion is filled with symbolism.
Yes, it is. The forbidden fruit is one of them. It's not a physical tree as we understand it. So all of the different things in religion are all presented as symbols. The serpent was a symbol of power. So the forces of nature were personified, and the serpent was the representative of that. In the story of Moses going into Pharaoh's court, throws down his staff, and he becomes a serpent. Well, Moses was dealing with the monotheistic God. Pharaoh, his magicians all cast down their staffs, and they become serpents, and they all get swallowed up into Moses' serpent. I see that as a mythological representation of reductionism. It's something that we're now coming to understand in the science world, and intuitively they saw it over 3,000 years ago. But if you don't understand the symbolism, you won't realize what they're telling you.
So who is Satan?
Satan. Well, if you believe in evolution, then we evolved from an animal, and the animal within is where all the animal passions come from. Self, sex, and power are all parts of what Eastern philosophy calls the lower subconscious, and that is basically our connection to the animal. It only knows one thing, and that is survive at all costs. It can justify lying, stealing, cheating, abuses, and even murder in order to get ahead. It isn't until we rise above that to what Eastern philosophy calls the upper subconscious that we begin to unlock the secrets that join us to the Creator. Our creative expression is how we are made in the image of the Creator. It has nothing to do with what either one looks like.
What does the word God mean to you?
Well, in the experience that I had, it's what's doing the creating. And if you want to know who the Creator is, look at what's doing the creating. In modern-day world, we see it as quantum field energies. They're everywhere, they're invisible, and they're the source from which all things come and back to which they go. So I see the God of religion and the unified field theory of physics as representing the same thing.
We have just a minute or so. Roy, give us some closing thoughts about your book.
Well, the end of the Mayan calendar, we'll go back to that. Up until now, our whole concept of evolution has been Earth-centered. Life started here. We originally thought that the Earth was the center of the universe, and we saw life as Earth-centered. Now we're starting to see that life may exist elsewhere, and we're even seeing possibilities of where it might exist. Science fiction is telling us the truth, and it usually predicts what is happening. Then we may be venturing outward. I believe that the end of the Mayan calendar is the beginning of our journey back to the stars. We're all made from star stuff. Every atom in our bodies was synthesized within stars. So I see it as a journey outward.
So you're hopeful for the future?
Very much so. I see the future as unlocking secrets that we can't grasp yet. But I believe those things are going to start coming out. So this year may be the year where spirituality begins to show itself. And I mean, people are saying that the veil between the natural and the supernatural is starting to break down. And I see that we're gonna know of things we don't even know are possible yet.
The title of the book, The Merging of Two Worlds, The Convergence of Scientific and Religious Thought. The author is Roy E. Bork. Roy, tell us how to get your book.
You can get it on the Amazon.com. You can get it on most major bookstores. You can get it at the Westbow Press, WESTBOW.com website. So basically any bookstore, Amazon.com or the Westbow Press books site will get it for you.
Thank you, Roy, for being with us on Indie Book Publishing. This interview brought to everyone by Westbow Press. Thanks again, Roy.
Thank you.
You're listening to Indie Book Publishing, and we'll be right back after these messages.
Get ready to live La Bella Vita with Dawn Catherine on Toginet.com. Live La Bella Vita. If you're wanting to know all the beauty tricks of the trade and the latest fashion trends before everyone else, this is your show. If you admire celebrities' beauty and their fashion sense, this is your show. Do you love wine and want to know more about the process it takes to make wine from the vine to the bottle? This is your show. Live La Bella Vita. For more on the show and your host, check out our website, LaBellaVitaCosmetico.com. This is the kind of show you can sink your teeth into. If you enjoy traveling and food and family, all with an Italian flair, then you can live La Bella Vita with your host, Dawn Catherine. Wednesday nights at midnight, 11 p.m. Central on Toginet.com.
Mark Lipinski is coming to Toginet. It's Creative Mojo with Mark Lipinski, a live two-hour show Wednesday afternoon starting at 3, 2 Central on Toginet.com. Creative Mojo. It's fun, entertaining, informative, inspirational, and illuminating. Lipinski has worked on such shows as Oprah, The View, The Joan Rivers Show, and Ricky Lake. He's busy, but he's got the drive to share with Creative Mojo, dedicated to the modern crafter and crafting lifestyle. Dive into the info and enjoy everything from celebs to entertainment news to recipes, quilting and needlework, knitting, painting, woodworking, Christmas crafts, and so much more. This show boldly encourages you to discover and harness your own creative spirit by living creatively every day. For more on Mark and the show, check out marklipinski.com. Don't miss the fun. It's Creative Mojo with Mark Lipinski, Wednesday afternoon starting at 3, 2 Central on Toginet.com.
Welcome back to Indie Book Publishing, helping authors publish, promote, and sell their books around the world. Now, back to your host, Steve Jorgensen.
The title of the book, The Only Lesson, and the author is Bill McKenna. And Bill joins us now on Indie Book Publishing, this interview brought to you by Balboa Press. Hello, Bill.
Hi, thanks for having me on.
Well, great to have you with us. The only lesson, that is a key to your life, and you believe to others as well. We'll get into more about the details of your book, but let me first read what you've written about your book, The Only Lesson. You say this: life hasn't always been easy for author Bill McKenna. In The Only Lesson, his inspirational memoir and journey of discovery, he shares his story of intense experiences and details how these experiences taught important concepts that became a part of his being. Well, life is a journey, and along your way, you've had some probably out-of-the-ordinary experiences, like a shipwreck, and we'll get into that. And you also survived a free fall and a skydiving mishap. That would get anybody's attention. Bill, why write the book? What was the motivation here?
Well, for me, when I finally understood the only lesson that we're here to learn, I really felt compelled to share it with the rest of the world.
All right. Well, you grew up in a family of 12. Now, that was an experience in and of itself, right?
Oh, yes. Well, you know, it's just one—it's one thing to be part of a family of 12, and I think it was quite another to be a part of our family. we grew up 6 miles from the Mexican border, and you know, there was a quasi-violent situation. I would call it a traditional, old-school Irish upbringing. So, you know, there's a liberal use of physical discipline.
Strict Irish Catholic upbringing.
Yes, yes. I'm sure a lot of people out there can identify with that.
Now, you even mentioned an abusive father.
Yeah, my father, he really did the best he could. I truly understand that from my perspective today. It wasn't an easy place to get to, but I now understand that he, with what he had and where he was at, he really was doing the best he could. And that understanding actually helped me to understand that me and everyone else is always doing the best they can as well. Kind of almost seems ridiculous when you see people doing things that you know are not right, but where they're at in that moment, that's the best they can do.
Why do you think you were attracted to the martial arts?
It's almost unexplainable. I guess I felt like I had experienced quite a bit of physical violence, and I also just had this chip on my shoulder. I didn't kind of know why. I just knew I was pretty angry, and I didn't want to be physically pushed around. Being kind of that mindset, it drew in other physical confrontations. Certainly the martial arts help with that, but ultimately the real help is not to have the conflict at all. And the understanding of the only lesson actually made that happen. The conflicts actually just went away.
Now, this athletic drive, you also were attracted to endurance races, running endurance races.
Yes, I did. I kind of understand a little bit better through studying that one of the aspects for people that have been physically abused is that they end up with an extremely high physical tolerance to pain. And for me, I always had that. I would break bones and still keep working. I ran many marathons and then 50-mile races. And then ultimately I ran the Western States 100, which at the time was considered the world's toughest endurance event. Today they have other things that are multi-day and kind of even tougher. But it was a very long day, 114 degrees at its hottest point across the American River, and anyway, it was an interesting day, something that at the time I really enjoyed.
Now, you learned to fly airplanes and helicopters along the way.
Yes, I kind of took an interest in aviation in college when I was at the airport skydiving. Ended up learning how to fly ultralights and got kicked out of the ultralight club because I looped the ultralight and did some other. I think the quote was that
you had violated the rules. That's what you had done.
No respect for the well-being of the rental aircraft or my own well-being, I think was the quote when I was kicked out. But I learned how to fly airplanes and eventually bought and owned a few helicopters and really kind of enjoyed that.
Well, tell us about this skydiving mishap, as you call it.
The skydiving incident was kind of interesting because a few of the kind of major incidents in my life have been preceded by a premonition. When I wrecked my yacht, I dreamed it verbatim. It was, and so much so that the exact details of it were happening. I thought I was dreaming again. But on the skydiving incident, I distinctly remember being on my way to the airport, and it's almost as if I'm there today. There's a tree-lined street, and the sun was shining through the trees, and I remember I had a convertible at the time. I thought it was really cool, and I just remember thinking, I wonder if this is the day that I'm going to die. And it was March 17th, and I went out, got in the plane, a series of situations that day, a fast plane, me being skydiving alone, being the last one out of the airplane, and having a new parachute that I had only jumped one or two times before. And that was really on the edge of margins, tolerance-wise, for my weight. I ended up getting into a situation where the parachute collapsed several hundred feet up, and I went in. And I remember on the way down, I was like, "Oh, brace yourself! This is going to be a very hard hit." And, you know, I had learned to roll from martial arts and, you know, jump and roll and things like that. So I was braced, but it happened so violently and so fast that I was knocked out. And I awoke on the ground very hot in an awful lot of pain. Remember, putting my, like a big, huge Charlie horse on my leg. I was like, "Oh, that hurts so bad." And I reached back and I pulled on it, and I could just hear all the bones just cracking. And I was like, "Oh, man, I'm going to have to go to the hospital." And I remember passing out right after that. And I have no idea how long I was out on the ground because I was miles away from the airport. Eventually, some people found me, and I went in the ambulance and spent about a month in ICU and getting a lot of metal put in my body and put back together. I got a crooked leg, but I can walk and everything's great. But it certainly took me to death's doorstep. One of the things that I realized, but it took me years to figure it out, was that all things in life are transient and temporary. The very thing that gives me pleasure will eventually give me pain, especially if I cling to it, if it's a physical possession or really virtually anything.
So you already mentioned about your yacht shipwreck experience just briefly. We won't go into details on that, but all these experiences you look back on to help you to learn, as you put it, the only lesson. So can you see that as a pattern?
Absolutely. It's very much a pattern. I didn't learn the lesson, and so what would happen for me is that the lesson would repeat itself over and over and over until the point at which I got it. It pretty much went along with everything in my life. When I would have problems with someone, for example, I had a problem with my father, and forgiving him and understanding and letting go, and fear as well. And I moved away at 18 years old, but the interesting thing is that by moving away and distancing myself, it didn't really make the situation any better. I just found other people to play the role of someone to be feared, someone who needed to be forgiven, someone who needed to be understood. So all of these things, as I didn't learn the lesson, someone else would step in and take the place. So as I would learn and understand kind of these very basic principles, they seem basic to me now, but at the time I certainly had an awful hard time learning from the difficult experiences. But as I learned them, it seems as if the lesson it goes away. The circumstance, the difficult circumstances go away.
You describe your wife as an intuitive. Tell us how that played into this book.
It was so interesting, actually, completely unexpected. She was my girlfriend. Actually, not my girlfriend at the time. I kind of had a bunch of back and forth with her. And I really wanted to marry her, but I couldn't get along with her. And spending more time with her, I started to understand that she was a psychic or intuitive, whatever you want to call it. And I could see that it was very real. She, I would say, hey, you know, what am I thinking? And, you know, I kind of pull something out of my head, just like a lemon. And there she was. She would say, it's a fruit, or no, it's a lemon. I was like, whoa, I couldn't even believe that was true. It was crazy. And there were many other incidents that that happened. And so what I did was I figured, you know, she couldn't seem to turn it off. It was all day, every day, that she was getting this kind of information. So I went out and bought a bunch of books on psychic development so I could read about it. Maybe I thought maybe if I just understood her that I could get along with her better. And as I read, many things came out of it. The first was that I understood that a lot of the physical pain she had, her stomach aches and headaches, were caused by other people. People that have that sensitive ability a lot of times will get hit in their stomach and physically feel pain from somebody who's agitated, resentful, has a low vibration, and especially if it's directed at them. And then, so I learned about that, and which she didn't know either. And then I also learned that all of these books had one thing in common. They said that everyone has psychic abilities, or the ability to, you know, contact guides or get information. But the main thing that stands in the way is not forgiving, holding on to resentments, because resentments are a very low frequency, and this type of information, the divine, operates at obviously a very high frequency, in the realm of love and bliss and joy and those sorts of things. And anyway, I'd never been forgiving. You know, I really held on to my resentments with a vice-like grip. I thought if I would just resent somebody enough that they would pay, you know, somehow they would pay for what they'd done. But when I looked at it, I was thinking, well, my wife now, she has all these abilities. I sure would like them. And I thought, well, the books are telling me that if I just forgive, that I'll have access to this type of information. And so I said, well, gosh, I'm not getting anything out of this, you know. I didn't get a new car, no money, no house, you know. Nothing good came out of it. I said, well, gosh, I know that this psychic information now is true, and if I could do it myself, that sure would make my life better and easier. So I decided to forgive, and I just forgave everybody kind of one by one, and I was just not prepared for what was going to happen. It was truly just an out-of-this-world experience.
The title of the book, The Only Lesson, and the author is Bill McKenna. Bill, tell us how to get your book.
It's available on BalboaPress.com, Amazon.com, Barnes & Noble, hard, soft cover, and electronic. Virtually every electronic method out there, Kindle, iPad, Nook, you name it.
Bill, thanks for being with us on Indie Book Publishing. This interview brought to everyone by Balboa Press. Thanks a lot, Bill.
Thank you, sir.
You're listening to Indie Book Publishing, and we'll be right back after these messages. Want to be challenged in a powerful way to leap beyond what you think is possible? Then join us Mondays for the Leah Jansen Show, every Monday at 10 a.m., 9 a.m. Central on TogiNet.com with Leah Jansen. Listen live as life coach Leah uses her coaching skills to give you the tools you need to take action and create momentum. You are encouraged to call in and share your greatest fears, challenges, and obstacles, and then listen as Leah obliterates those barriers to success. For more on Leah and the show, check out her website, LeahJansen.com. That's Leah, LeahJansen.com. Spend 1 hour with Leah, and you'll be captivated by her energy, enthusiasm, and magnetism. You'll quickly become addicted to her positive attitude and make-it-happen mentality. Ready for a life-changing, mood-altering show? Then get ready for Leah Jansen and listen live to The Leah Jansen Show every Monday morning at 10 a.m., 9 a.m. Central on TogiNet.com.
People think I've made it. I'm popular. I seem happy all the time. I have great clothes and I'm involved in everything. But I have questions, doubts, and fears, just like every other teenager. That's why I'm glad for Teen Talk Radio, where it's all about choices.
Join us for Teen Talk Radio with Nicole Odell, Thursday nights at 10, 9 central on TogiNet.com.
The choices we have to make that can alter the course of our lives. Life is too much pressure if we try to go it alone. I tune in to Teen Talk Radio with Nicole Odell every week to get reminded that I'm not alone. Nicole Odell is an expert on what happens in the lives of teenagers. Join her as she deals with topics like peer pressure, purity, drugs, alcohol, and many other things that might come up along the way. She writes books and speaks to people all over the place, but she says her favorite moments are when she can pull up a chair and chat with teens about what's important to us.
For more information on Nicole and her books, go to NicoleOdell.com. Then join us for Teen Talk Radio with Nicole Odell, Thursday nights at 10, 9 central on TogiNet.com.
Teen Talk Radio, where it's all about choices.
Welcome back to Indie Book Publishing, helping authors publish, promote, and sell their books around the world. Now, back to your host, Steve Jorgensen.
The title of the book, Bridge of the Gods, The Golden Pathway to Your Highest God Self. A Handbook for Ascending Humanity. And the author is Reverend Dr. Linda DeKoff. And Dr. Linda joins us now on Indie Book Publishing, this interview brought to you by Balboa Press. Hello, Dr. Linda.
Hello, Steve.
Well, great to have you with us. You're going to take us on quite a spiritual journey here, and we're looking forward to it. First of all, though, I'd like to read just a couple of things you've written about your book. You say your book, Bridge of the Gods, will really help you get over past destructive habits of mind and feelings that have led to disappointments and help you to really see yourself anew. The precious ray of God and the unlimited divine self that you truly are in God's eyes. Infinite horizons will open unto you. Well, we certainly, in this day and age, need to have unlimited and infinite horizons. There's so many people who do struggle, don't they?
Yes, and you know, what I have discovered is that we cannot change unless we go higher. You know, unless something changes in consciousness and awareness of oneself as who you really are, beyond your experiences, beyond the conditions you may be grappling with at the moment. Until persons get to understand who they really are as one with the universe, one with the unlimited, one with God and all that that means, you will not rise out of your circumstances. But it, once one has realized that, you know, we are more than meets the eye, we are far more, and there really are limitless horizons to which any individual can go, until we realize we're sort of going around in the same, some people call it karmic circles of cause and effect. So when we get a new idea of ourselves beyond everything that we're living, even in the now, everything, awareness begins to change, and actually new thoughts are inspired within your very spirit and soul and within your mind, and you see yourself differently. And you know, through a certain process, very conscious, you know, they say the yogi must raise him or herself. So it takes the conscious participation by the individual in their own evolution. And according to, you know, how much you can perceive as possible for yourself, will as a universal spiritual individual, one with all that is, to the degree that you can see that about yourself, you can transform your conditions. You can come out of chronic, you know, so many people suffer and struggle with chronic conditions, and they try to address it mentally. They try to address it through willpower, through force, through even positive thinking, if it's not rooted in the very soul, in the very heart, you know, where you get the aha about something, you really see it, feel it, know it, you cannot, you just cannot, it's going to break down for you because it's held in place by mental force. So the process is at once a process of raising consciousness, to be aware of the greater, and also of aligning the heart in a greater feelingness of unity with all that is. And, you know, it's the heart of the countless, many countless chambers that is evinced by all the great masters. And, you know, you wonder why, both in the East and the West, it's a common practice everywhere for people to meditate in front of a picture of the master, whoever that may be, whether it's Jesus, whether it's Buddha, even great personages. We study their lives and we read about them. And, you know, the very fact that we can recognize the greatness in these others who are demonstrating the higher qualities through their being and through their life and through their works means, if we can see it, it's because it's in us. You know, you can't see or recognize what is not in you. So, you know, tradition, we see that people honor the great saints, the mystics, and so on, is because we recognize something in them that is also in us, and through the observation of their lives and how they are and the virtues they manifest, and, you know, we can bring that unto ourselves because it is in us, but it needs the conscious cultivation.
Well, your life is filled with all kinds of different experiences. You're called the noted founder today of New Thought Institute of New York and New Thought International, but your life has been filled with an early career on Broadway and film, TV. You've even been a teen rock and roll singer. So,
That's true. So I'm into self-expression.
Exactly.
And, yeah, so it's been very varied, and I say that I have absolutely loved and been driven by love, you know, toward everything that I have done. So these activities, which come from my particular, you know, creative self, the gifts that, you know, that God gave me, you know, opportunities just opened up in my life. As I, you know, like Goethe says, just take one step toward whatever and the window of opportunity opens. So I learned to follow my heart and to follow whatever I felt compelled to do, and then the opportunity would open. So yeah, I love music. And it started out with rock and roll singer at, you know, 13 years old. And we won all the competitions in the local area and, you know, awards and had a wonderful time. And then it came to a point where that, you know, felt complete. And what came into my mind is that I wanted to... I was very attracted to performance because of the opportunity to go in depth into a character and then to deliver the character to the audience in such a way that the audience can develop a line of empathy. And as you know, in theater, you know, it represents life. So the characters that you're portraying are going to touch persons, you know, who may be going through a similar circumstance. And in all of art, there is a period of transformation where the character comes out right, or, you know, something happens to change. And therefore, there is an opportunity to move persons, to share, you know, share through your performance what's going on with those other persons. And, you know, that also came to a point where I had, you know, really been honored to do great, great roles, you know, Nina and Chekhov, Seagull, and be on Broadway with Rex Harrison and do all these great and dynamic things. But still, you know, after doing some really, really, you know, very desirable, terrific, you know, roles, something was still compelling me. You know, and I used to say as a child, I want to be one of two things. I want to be an actress, or I want to be a research scientist. Now, that used to occur to me at 3 years old. You know, where is that coming from? But the thing is that the depths of life and healing and the whys of why things are, universality, you know, loving your neighbor, that's always been a big thing for me. I've always been universal in spirit. So I see all as one. And, you know, I became much more involved through a sequence of very extraordinary events, was brought in touch with great, great teachers. And, you know, when the student is ready, the teacher appears. So early on, I met some great teachers, healers, and so on. And then my depth of interest had to do really with healing, because I've seen a lot of situations in life with other people that I wish I could assist them. I felt that I could. And so these teachers, you know, through a combination of some very great individuals coming into my life, I began to formulate my own, taking from what they taught me and putting it together as maybe, you know, another form. Not saying anything different, because truth never changes, but to express it in a different way, a very tangible way, a very immediate way to people, so that they could be empowered to change their lives.
Well, Dr. Linda, we have a few minutes left. I wanted to have you just, you know, expound a little bit more on this principle that you've mentioned now. You said there's no situation of a mental, physical, emotional, or spiritual nature that cannot be healed.
That's right. And so, you know, being that the human being is filled, the human soul, the human being, is filled with the divine. It's our origin, as I was saying before. So as you increase consciousness to know about yourself what God or the universe or whatever word you want to use, the all in the all, the great isness, what is known about, as you increase yourself to embrace that knowing, you will rise up. So very practically, for instance, if you know there is a principle of perfect healing in the universe that people can use, you can heal yourself all the way, and many have, from the most, you know, what people call terminal conditions. People have risen above, because the great law, which is a law of your infinite being, supersedes any other lower law. And, of course, we've seen many do this, and many do not make it, but everyone who concentrates on the nature of the universe of God in you, of the all in the all in you, will realize there is no limit. So you can consciously practice in the midst of when you feel, I can't, it's impossible. You know, how can I? You say, well, it's not up to me, myself, as a little individual, but there is a power I can use that courses through me and all of life. And the more you say to yourself, I can, because of this power, I can use this power, and you consciously practice changing your hapless, negative, I can't thoughts to I can because of the infinite in me, not by your own will or power, but because of the infinite in you, you can. And you learn to draw upon this infinite resource through prayer, meditation, gratitude, to immediately address whatever situation comes in front of you. So you're no longer thinking of yourself as alone in this universe, dust to dust, and nothing, but you're recognizing there is the greater within you that you can use. And as I say, it must be conscious and applied right in the midst. And so the last thing, I know we're running out of time, but what I want people to know about this book is that it gives you, Bridge of the Gods is really the bridge, the internal bridge to your highest conceivable self, you know, the rose and the seed, the absolute, the most developed you. And so as you, this book gives you not only information, but it gives you experience. So when you're reading it, and it opens with a it's a dynamic book. And so you open with a meditation that clears consciousness to be able to enter in to understand these things. There's lots of great stories of people who have worked the principle in tools people will find in this book, which are easy, and they're just interjected as we go along, up the ladder, so to speak. You address it, and you can have the change right then and there as you're reading, and you have the tools. So it's so important to have these very, very practical tools so that you can walk the talk. And the tools are there. The meditations are immense and soaring so that you can have the internal experience of yourself succeeding, getting over the chronics, getting past the limitations, getting there. And so when you can return, and so there's 12 chapters, they move the reader from the awakening, which helps, I hope, can help people to awaken to the truth of their pure self, and then takes you up the ladder to heal emotions, body, mind, so that you have this totality of spiritual healing as you go along. You become self-reliant, reliant upon the divine power in you and all surrounding. And it's a joyous adventure. It's not, you know, heavy and burdensome. And I believe God is near and dear. And I believe that every heart can touch this principle of the divine that is within and is a compelling force. Otherwise, no one would want to get well, you know, or even think they could. No one would want to do better in life. So the only people need to know the way, the way.
Reaching your divine capacity, as you put it.
Yeah, your divine capacity, it's in there. It can be brought out. There's a way. It doesn't have to be. You only have to desire. You only have to want this liberty for yourself. And, you know, liberty is not, you know, it's a practical thing. It will show up in your life. When you've made a change, your life will show you that. The mirror will change because what you're thinking into life and believing about life has changed. So your experience changing is an automatic. So I say work within.
Well, Dr. Linda, tell us how to get your book, Bridge of the Gods, The Golden Pathway to Your Highest God Self.
Yes. Well, now, Barnes & Noble, barnesandnoble.com, amazon.com, and balboapress.com have the book, and it's in hardcover, softcover, and also, you know, e-book for those who like to read, you know, read from their computers, and Kindle and Nookbook. So it's available in all versions. They also, if people would like to get a free preview of it, I most strongly suggest Amazon.com has right now, you know, the best free preview available. There's a feature called Look Inside. So if you go to, particularly in Amazon.com, if you go to the paperback or softcover version, rather than, you know, you may want to order the Kindle after, but if you want to see the best free preview, go into the book version, you know, the paperback or hardcover, and you'll get a good introduction. And you'll also be able to see on Amazon.com the, you know, five-star reviews that have been coming in and the benefit that other people are getting from it. And so, but it's available in all. In all three bookstores, Barnes & Noble, and I think also Ingram has it and various other publishers. So, but the main ones are Barnes & Noble, Amazon, and Balboa Press, who is my publisher. So, and they did a beautiful job setting it up for me and actually transporting the information to other sites so that people can purchase wherever they choose to. I was also, I don't know if it would be helpful, but to give, if people also want another, to look at the description of the 12 chapters, brief descriptions of, you know, what they will experience as they read the book. my author website has some very good, and blog has some very good information in there. So it's http://revdrlindadekoff.authorsexpress.com, and you'll find a lot of good information in there.
Reverend Dr. Linda DeKoff, thank you so much, Dr. Linda, for being with us on Indie Book Publishing, this interview brought to everyone by Balboa Press. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Steve. Have a wonderful day.
You've been listening to Indie Book Publishing with your host, Steve Jorgensen. Join us again next week at noon Eastern as Steve interviews another great author.